You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday the 28th of January 2020 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioalbion.com. Well, today we're going to have a look at a Guardian article that came out on Sunday and it's titled How to Fight Racism Using Science. And of course, all it does is use straw man arguments and very little science. Because the differences between the races are highly evident through using science. I mean, this is what we base our information on, is scientific studies, regardless of the fact that it's very hard to actually get them funded. Anything that shows difference, they try to stop people getting the money from them, try to stop people getting the grants from them. But they are out there. And they are used, I mean, particularly in the area of medicine, where, for instance, blacks are far more likely to get prostate cancer. Jews get Tay-Sachs disease. White people get cystic fibrosis. There are all these different diseases that are prevalent among the different races. And when you get to the topic of organ transplants, bone marrow transplants are particularly difficult if you're a mixed race person because you have to have somebody who is of the same race as yourself in order for the bone marrow transplant to take. And unfortunately, mixed race people don't have anybody else that is just like them because it's a modern innovation, this idea of genetically modifying humans by interbreeding the different races. So what we'll do is we'll have a look at this article and I'll answer each point that the author raises. Let's just have a look at who the author is actually before we start. Adam Rutherford. Rings a bell, but I'm not sure why. Racism is a prejudice that has a long-standing relationship with science. The invention of race occurred in the age of empires and plunder, when men of the emerging discipline of science classified the people of the world mostly from their armchairs. So he's assuming that people are unaware of the Egyptian Empire of about 4,000 years ago that was well aware of race and that depicted it in pictures, clearly showing the black race, the white race, and the Arab-Semitic mixed race that was around at the time. There's even instances of Pharaoh Tutankhamun being aware of race. If you look at his sandals, he's got a famous pair of sandals, and on the soles of the sandals, on one sole of the sandal, there is the Arab-Semitic type, and on the sole of the other sandal, there is the black Negroid type. They were well aware of race. If you look back at the histories that were written around about 2,000 years ago, you can see that they talk about differences between the races. There are descriptions of Negroes at that time. They're not particularly flattering. People were well aware of race. It's not something new. It's not an invention. It's a biological classification. Just the same as it's a biological classification to say there are blue whales, humpback whales, and sperm whales. Carl Linnaeus is the father of biological taxonomy. having invented the system that we use today, genus and species, Homo sapiens. And originally we had Homo superior and Homo inferior, and those were the two classifications. Classifications were based primarily on skin colour, some on a handful of skull measurements, and they also came with shoddy value judgments. Really? I think classifications were based on a lot more than just skin colour. They were based upon skull shape, body proportion, and also on the type of person that there was, and how advanced they had become, whether they had a system of writing, for instance. If you don't have a system of writing, then you can't pass on the knowledge from one generation to the next, and everything just stays exactly the same, basically. Writing is very important. Whether these people had a system of law. Just the same as when we classify animals, we classify them on their intelligence, whether they can be domesticated or not, as well as what they look like, what their proportions are, and all the rest of it. They did back then. They didn't just simply say, oh, this person is a different colour. He must be different. I mean, the colour of somebody is really not what's most important in determining what race they are. I mean, you can get somebody, say, with fair skin, somebody with that sort of looks white just by looking at the skin, but their body will be of a completely different race. Letitia Dean, who plays the part of Sharon on EastEnders, is a good example of this. She has the body and bone structure of a black female. In actual fact, there is a black female in the show as well that has exactly the same body type as her. Yet she has fair skin. So race is not based on skin colour. This is a canard. This is a straw man argument that the left like to put out there. There are very, very big differences in features, just on the faces of the other races. That's not just skin colour, it's nose position, it's jaw position, it's brow position, it's the proportions of the skull shape. And this is how forensic detectives tell what the person who say they found a body and they've just found a scrap of bone and they want to tell what type of person they were. They can tell just from a scrap of bone exactly what race they are. Race is not just about skin colour. Skin colour is just a part of it. Linnaeus had the people of Africa as lazy and governed by caprice. Native Americans were zealous and stubborn. East Asians were haughty, greedy, and ruled by opinions. Now, what is the author saying here? Is the author saying that that is incorrect? He certainly doesn't provide any conflicting opinions. It's just, oh, just by stating this, that they had these ideas of general racial characteristics, that means they must be wrong. And it also contradicts what he's just told us, that the classifications were based primarily on skin colour, because he's also classifying them by their actions. Of course, we're told we should judge people by their actions, and that's exactly what is done in racial science, particularly here, judging people by their actions. Voltaire believed that black people were a different species. All of these taxonomies were inherently hierarchical, with white Europeans always on the top. Well, there is a belief that black people are a different species. Going by the standards that we use for separating one species from another, in a lot of categories, you could say that blacks were a different species. The thing that causes people to question that is the fact that as humans, we can all interbreed together and produce viable offspring. But there are instances in the animal world of different types of animal being able to breed together and produce viable offspring. I mean, we have the lion and the tiger that produces the liger. Would anybody say that lions and tigers are the same species? And of course the taxonomies are hierarchical. The whole of nature is hierarchical. Hierarchy is built into the whole of creation. So of course there will be racial hierarchies as well. I mean, what these people were doing is observing nature and recording what they saw. In the 19th century, Darwin's half-cousin Francis Galton and others tightened their scientific arguments for race, though. As Darwin noted, no one could agree on how many races there actually were, the range being between 1 and 63. Now, that's because a lot of the races that they were trying to determine were, in actual fact, mixed races. People like the Native Americans or the Red Indians. America itself had had white settlers there, white settlers that had brought black slaves with them, probably been some Mongoloid types there as well, and all mixed in together, you come up with the Native American. And this is why when they were doing these taxonomies, they said that the Native Americans were a mixed race. Now, I personally believe that the other races are all mixed races anyway. I think there were originally Aborigine types on each different continent, and white people went out there, colonized, and eventually interbred with them, which created the races that we have now. Because if we do the DNA tests, we inevitably find that amongst, say, that the Chinese or the Africans or the Arabs, they have a certain amount of European DNA. But if we test white people, we don't find that we have a certain amount of black DNA or a certain amount of Chinese DNA. It's the other way around. So I personally believe that the other races are created from a mix of what was on that land before and the white settlers. But just the fact that people find it hard to tell how many there are, that's not really a rebuttal. And in fact, there are basically three types: Caucasoid, Mongoloid, and Negroid. And that is the three basic types. And then you get mixes between the two, such as Arab, which comes from the Hebrew word for mixed. Modern genetics clearly shows that the way we colloquially define a race does not align with the biology that underpins human variation. Instead, race is a cultural taxonomy, a social construct. And again, he provides no evidence for this. There are people groups, and when we test their DNA, the DNA lines up with the way that we define race as people. So when they test a group to see whether they are all of the same type, they discover that they are, in the vast majority, all of the same type. And when they ask them, they self-identify as that type. And when you ask people what type they are, they confirm that, yes, that is what type they are. So there's no rebuttal of this. There's no proof here that race is just a social construct. The author just says that, and it says that it doesn't align with the biology. Well, it does align with the biology. Read Edward Dutton's book on ethnocentrism, for instance, if you want to learn more about that. Or read Race, Evolution and Behaviour by J.P. Rushton. And it's just a known scientific fact that the DNA tests of the people groups confirm the identification that people actually make of these people. Then the author moves on to skin colour. What we see with our eyes is the merest fraction of a person, but humans are a highly visual species, and skin colour is the primary factor in allocating race. This idea is modern, though, only becoming the primary classifier during the so-called Age of Enlightenment. Modern genetics reveals a much more complicated and fascinating picture. What are they saying here, then? Are they saying that the word Niger, Negro, doesn't actually mean black? I mean, that's the oldest word that we actually have for Negroes, and it's Latin for black. And as I've already pointed out, the Egyptians classified people by their races, drew pictures of the differences between the races. Lighter skin is at least partially an adaptation to less sunny skies, as a means of protecting us from folate deficiency. Well, that isn't true, is it? We've had white people in Africa for hundreds of years now, and their skin doesn't start turning black when they give birth. They give birth to white children. If you look at the Berbers, when the Berbers give birth, they give birth to white children. This idea that it was the sun that gradually turned these people black, it just isn't true, is it? What about the Egyptians? They were quite clearly white, and they were living on the African continent for 1,000 years or so before they eventually fell to miscegenation. I mean, we can see this. We can see this happening. We can see the pictures of the Egyptians from the Alexandrian era, and they are all quite clearly mixed race, or the majority of them are, whereas 1,000 years before that, they were still white. This idea that the sun somehow darkened the skin of the Negro is a nonsense, because it's not just that they have dark skin. It's that they have a completely different bone structure, a different form, different features. And it goes hand in hand with the idea that white people are civilization builders, and we have a high IQ because we had to survive in a cold climate, when in actual fact we would never have been able to survive in the cold climate if we didn't already have a high intelligence and didn't already have civilization. I think it's quite clear that we obviously started in the Fertile Crescent, which was where it was easiest to grow crops. And once we had the civilizations there in the Fertile Crescent, the adventurous types among us went out exploring, and we started up mines in Britain and gradually made our way north and were feeding the resources back to the centers of civilization, which is why civilization began there in the Fertile Crescent and then spread its way out from there, with the last place that civilization took hold being Northern Europe, because it was the hardest environment in which to survive in. But you had to have a means of heating yourself, you had to have domestication of animals, you had to have a means of navigating by the stars, all of these things you need before you can actually live in the north. And also we have the Eskimos that live in the north, and they have a very low IQ. Living in the cold for them hasn't increased their IQ. But that's not one of the ones that this author picks up on. As I say, it's just the lighter skin that he mentions. Then he says there are 1.3 billion Africans, 42 million African Americans. Not only are these huge numbers, but the people in question are more diverse genetically than anyone else on Earth. And yet Westerners refer to all of them as black. This is a scientifically meaningless classification, and one that is baked into Western culture from 5 centuries of scientific racism. Stereotyping based on pigmentation is foolish because racial differences are skin deep. Well, there's two things there, isn't there? Of course we refer to all the Africans as black. I mean, what is black? It's the English word for the Latin word Negro, which is the biological classification for these people. They are Negroid peoples. That is the classification for them. So that's why we say that they are black. Stereotyping based on pigmentation is foolish, because racial differences are skin deep. They're quite clearly not skin deep, as I showed with the example there of Letitia Dean in EastEnders. And what are stereotypes anyway? It's based upon our experience, and we use our experience to tell us what somebody is like. It's a form of self-defense. We discriminate between what is good for us and what is bad for us. And we do that from experience. So stereotyping is sensible. It's sensible. It keeps you safe to have experience and understand what people are like and predict whether somebody is going to be good for you or whether somebody is going to be bad for you. Then they move on to the question of indigenous peoples, and they title that as "These Are Our Lands." Indigeneity is a tricky concept. The British Isles have been invaded throughout their history. 1066 was the most recent hostile conquest, but before that we were occupied by Vikings, who followed Angles, Saxons, Alans, and dozens of other tribes. The Romans ruled for a while, with conscripts not from Rome but from all over their empire, including Gaul, the Mediterranean, and sub-Saharan Africa. And every single one of those people were white. Even the ones from what they call sub-Saharan Africa. The part of the Roman Empire was Carthage, which was before that was part of the great Phoenician Empire, which started out white. And eventually they had a few mixed race peoples there as well. There's in our history books, it tells us that the King of Africa came to England. It doesn't mean the king of the Negro types in Africa came to England. It meant the king of the Vandals came to England, because the Vandals took over Carthage. They defeated the Romans and the Vandals took over. And it was their king that actually came to Britain. And of course, the BBC and the black activists today will try and tell us that it was actually black Africans that came over. So all these peoples were white, and they were all related, as all white people are. We are all related. We're all an extended family. So indigeneity, why is it a tricky concept? Because it was white people that built the civilization in Britain. Nobody else. It was white people that built everything that we have here. So that shows that we are the indigenous people. But they continue. They say about 4,500 years ago, Britain was populated primarily with farmers who had European ancestors. DNA taken from the bones of the long dead suggests they were probably olive-skinned with dark hair and brown eyes. The Beaker folk arrived in Britain about 4,400 years ago, and again, according to ancient DNA, within a few centuries had replaced almost the entire population. We don't know how or why, whether it was violence, disease, or something else. So basically our ancestors, the Beaker folk, they replaced the people that were here before us. And when this author says that these farmers who had European ancestors, what he means is that thousands and thousands of years back, where you've got hominids in Europe that are nothing to do with us, because, as I say, we came in from the Fertile Crescent, he classes that as European, just because these hominids were in Europe. But they are nothing to do with the countries that we have built, the civilization that we have built. I would agree with him that the Beaker folk replaced them. That's what happens. People have to pay for the land that they live in. They pay for it with their ancestors' blood. It has to be taken by force. That's what we see going on today, actually, over there in Palestine. The Israelis are having to take the land by force. And it's only the same thing that we did in America and in New Zealand and in Australia. I mean, that is just a fact of life. If you're going to try and take over a territory and civilize it, first you have to pacify it. Before them, there were darker-skinned hunter-gatherers who had been there a few thousand years. Then it all gets a bit foggy. The earliest evidence of British humans is in the crumbling coastline of Happisburg in Norfolk, where size 9 footprints of an unknown species of human were set in soft stone 900,000 years ago. Well, going by that logic, you could say that the Negroes aren't actually indigenous to Africa because there was some monkey creature there a million years ago that is probably about as related to the Negroes as this giant was related to us. They say this was a species of human. What is their definition of human? 900,000 years ago? I mean, if they're going to say that this was a species of human, then they have to accept that there are different species within humankind. There are different subspecies. We aren't related to this person that was there 900,000 years ago. And as I say, the indigenous question comes down to who was it that built the place? We built Europe. That's why we are indigenous to Europe. As I've said, I think the white people were in places like China first. But the Chinese are the people that built China, because the white people were bred out there thousands of years ago, and the place since then has been built by the Chinese. So you would say, well, the Chinese are the indigenous peoples. If you look at, say, Australia, you would say that the Aborigines there were the indigenous peoples because they have structures that they built there. That's what it comes down to. They continue, no country, people, political power or border is permanent. The only true indigenous Brits were not even our own species. So when racists say England for the English, or when they talk about indigenous people, I do not know who they mean, or more specifically, when they mean. They probably don't either. Well, I've just answered that for people, haven't I? It's the people that built the civilization that's there. It's the people that built the structures there. The people that buried their ancestors there and honour them. Next, they move on to purity. There are no purebred humans. Our family trees are matted webs, and all lines of our ancestry get tangled after a few generations. All Nazis have Jewish forebears, all racists have African ancestors. Non-racists often think that their ancestry is somehow pure too, and this can be bolstered by misinterpreting commercial genetic ancestry kits. But no matter how isolated or wholesome you think your family tree is, it is a node on a tangled bank, linked directly to everyone else on your continent after only a few centuries, and everyone in the world after a couple of millennia. So after a couple of million years, you might be connected to everybody else in the world. And of course, just because they find a certain part of a DNA sequence in a hominid from 10,000 years ago or 20,000 years ago, and it resembles a genetic sequence that we have today, it doesn't mean we are descended from them. I mean, everything on Earth is made out of the same building blocks. You wouldn't say that a bicycle was descended from a car because they both make use of nuts and bolts. And it's the same thing as saying that we must be descended from these people from thousands of years back just because we have part of our genetic code that is similar to them. There's nothing to confirm that we are descended from them. And when we look at our DNA, as I said, if people have DNA from these other races within them, then they're mixed race. White people do appear to have a pure strain. And I wouldn't advise people to do these DNA tests anyway. The best way to tell if you're white is if you can blush. If you can blush, then you're white. If you do these DNA tests, there is always a margin of error there, and you can get people that are extremely concerned because they've been told that they've got 0.05% Jew in them or Negro in them, and you know that can destroy them. And yet it could just be a mistake. And we've also heard of people that work in these DNA testing companies deliberately telling people that they aren't white if they know that this person is supportive of nationalism. Finally, they move into sports, and they actually title this section Black Power. Now, how is that for highlighting the double standards that we have here? If any author was to write white power somewhere, he would be attacked, he would be told that he's a racist, he's a white supremacist, and it's quite acceptable for an author to title a section Black Power. And again, it's full of straw men and no science to actually back up what they're saying. The last white man to win the 100 metres final at the Olympics was Alan Wells in 1980, a year when the US boycotted the event. This was also the last time white men competed in the final, five in total. For many, this forms the basis of a long-standing assumption that black people, and more specifically African Americans, Jamaicans, or Canadians have a biological advantage for explosive energy sports? Well, no, actually looking at their bodies tell us that they have a biological advantage for explosive energy sports because they have a different center of gravity. Also, we can see that they have higher levels of testosterone. And we know from biology that they have different twitch muscles to us. They have a different type of twitch muscle, which is for explosive energy, which is what gives them the edge. The author says the argument that informs this misguided idea is that centuries of slavery have resulted in selection for explosive energy genes about which we know very little. This is also a total non-starter for many reasons. No, that isn't. I haven't heard anybody say that it's because of centuries of slavery, unless that's somebody making some kind of a joke, that it's because of them trying to run away from people trying to catch them for slavery. I mean, the reason for this is simple. It's a biological reason. They have these fast twitch muscles that Caucasians don't have. They continue, but for the sake of argument, let's pretend that genes were selected that related to power and strength. Why then do Eastern Europeans dominate weightlifting, yet are absent from sprinting? Why do African Americans dominate in boxing, but not wrestling? Where are all the black sprint cyclists? Why is it that in the 50 meters freestyle and swimming, in the whole history of the Olympics, the number of African American finalists is one? None of these facts align with the slavery explanation for African American dominance in the 100 meters. No, they don't, because nobody actually makes that straw man argument. But what all those instances do prove that the author just listed is that there are biological differences between the races. That's why there've never been any black freestyle swimmers in the whole history of the Olympics, because they have a much smaller chest cavity, so they can't get so much air in there, so they don't float very well in the water, and also their bones are much denser and much heavier, so they find it very difficult to swim. It's all to do with biology, not because people say that Africans were slaved. I mean, this is one of the most ridiculous straw man arguments I've ever seen, and the author basically just proves what nationalists do say with his instances trying to disprove it. Finally, he says, the point is this. Sprinters in the Olympics, or indeed any elite sports people, are not a data set on which a statistician could draw any satisfactory conclusions. Yet it is precisely the data on which extremely popular racial stereotypes are based. Elite athletes deserve better praise than the belief that they have auspicious ancestry. And that's nonsense. It's not these racial classifications and ideas about the differences between sport are not based on just looking at the sportsman. They're based on biological studies that show the differences between the races, the different bone structure, the different twitch muscles, the different center of gravity. All these things. I mean, particularly if you look at blacks, they've got much longer legs. So of course they're going to be better at a certain type of running because they've got longer legs and shorter chests. I mean, it's very simple to look at people. Once you understand that there are differences, it's very, you know, they're glaringly obvious once you know about them. Once you know that the emperor is wearing no clothes, it becomes glaringly obvious. Anyway, I hope that helps some of you out there. If you ever get into a discussion about any of these things, and if anybody tries to use these straw man arguments against you that The Guardian has, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.